Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today we're going to talk about how vitamin D allows you to live a longer life because it's linked to longer telomeres. Harvard Medical School and the University of Tromsø in Norway have done the research. I'll do the explaining. But that's just one of the things we're going to be tackling. Also, just yesterday, one of the greatest scientific minds and biologists in history, he won the Nobel Prize in medicine for discovering the HIV virus, Luc Montagnier. He was a professor. He worked at the Pasteur Institute with a whole team. And this article today that I'm going to read to you, just written, is in memory of him. Also, I'm going to show you a video clip of him saying something that no one in the media, no one in the scientific community would acknowledge. Even the New York Times in its obituary mentioned briefly that, yeah, he won the Nobel Prize, but then he became controversial. Was he controversial, or was what he was saying controversial, and he had the courage to challenge it? And then I'm going to show you that what he said was true, verifiable. Now, to my knowledge, we're the only people ever anywhere in the world to validate what he said, and we have the scientific proof for it. I would hope that those in this audience who care about the truth and care about lies being perpetrated by the establishment will take what I'm saying and share it with everyone, especially the film, because the film is proof that Luc Montagnier was right, but then there was no money made when he was right. So Anthony Fauci then took the lead. So that's what we're going to do today. Time permitting, I will also open it up for calls. I also want to mention that, if time permits, we'll show you a little clip. It's only about 35, 40 seconds long, of a woman driving for 1 hour in suburbs of Detroit before she meets the bridge that connects Canada and the United States. Now, what she's showing you, and you see, is the entire hour was back-to-back-to-back-to-back trucks. The mainstream media has not covered that. It's showing, those are Americans, by the way, supporting the truckers in Canada. Just for a second, do you remember about a year ago I said, these mandates are wrong, these mandates are unhealthy? I read OSHA's actual manual about how long masks should be wearing, what type of mask, what they will filter at, what's the danger when you wash a mask and the particulate matter goes into the lungs and cause lung disease because it doesn't biodegrade down. I talked about and showed you a video of what happens after 15 seconds of children wearing a mask, what happens to the carbon dioxide, the ability of the air to be brought into the lungs, and the oxidative stress of carbon dioxide when you expel the results of that. So two separate videos. One, 15 seconds, and you're in oxidative stress. You're producing carbon dioxide. That's building up. You're breathing it back in. These are on children, and yet they've been wearing them for a year, 6, 8 hours a day. And then also what happens when you deprive the brain of oxygen and you go into oxygen debt? Should be about 21% oxygen in the air, and with a mask of 17%. And suddenly alarms went off in both masks. And these were all forms of masks. So we showed you all this. We showed you the science. And yet, only now are they starting to say, yeah, we're going to take the mask off children in school. Do you realize how much damage has already been done? And the big damage you haven't seen yet. Because we're going to be destroying children's brains. Have. And that's from one of the world's leading neurologists writing a paper. In any case, we're going to show you some videos that are important. We're going to show you why is the media not covering that because, and I said at that time, I said, the American majority of citizens, vast majority, are going to remain silent. We call them the silent majority. And they're not going to act until there's so much pain they have to. Well, now there's so much pain they're acting. The pain of watching their children be indoctrinated into terrible racist philosophies in school. the fact that we are telling people that you have no value. We'll make all decisions for you. You have no sovereignty over your body. What goes into it, we do. And now they're giving us the great reset, the fourth industrial revolution, Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum and Davos. But then we showed you just this week, for the first time, a documentary about who really controls all the corporations. And there are only like 5 to 7 companies. BlackRock and Vanguard are the top ones. And then that means that if they don't control a Joe Rogan, and they don't, and they can't make money from him, and they haven't, but they do make money from Howard Stern, and they own the network that he was given hundreds of millions of dollars of contracts with, then why is it we have a double standard? Why is one person shamed and told to apologize, and does, and that's Joe Rogan, which he shouldn't have, because he, at least on the first part, he should not have. On the second part, yes, he should have apologized and tell us what he learned from using the N-word years ago in a different context. But then Howard Stern uses it in blackface and not a single report. Why is that? Does that have anything to do with the people who control everything? And so you can be on the wrong side of an issue, the wrong side of history, and have nothing happen to you, and be on the right side of history, the right side of truth, and then you're demonized for it. That's where we're living now. That's why I'm going to play these tapes today. We began, of course, with the latest on health and healing. Here's the really good news, and this is really good news. When you increase your vitamin D level, it's associated with a longer telomeres, T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E-S. That's the marker of biological aging of this new study. So that's good news. It was published in the Journal of Nutrition and showed a correlation, and that the more vitamin D, the healthier the telomeres, the longer they last, the longer you live, and also potential cancer risk reduction. Now, for those of you who've been taking vitamin C, good for you. Seoul National University in South Korea showed that it promotes mental vitality in healthy young adults. And this was a cross-sectional analysis and randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial. So they investigated the link between vitamin C status and vitality and psychological functions in a cross-sectional study. And it worked. It showed a substantial improvement. The more vitamin C concentrations, the more vitality, which means overcoming fatigue and improving attention and mood status, meaning less stress, less depression, and more positive thoughts, less negative thoughts, from using vitamin C. So this is brand new. This is really neat. So that's good news there. And again, this was a good self-controlled resource study. So anyhow, take your vitamin C, take your vitamin D, but also it's never too late to eat healthily. And this is the University of Barcelona, which of course is in Spain. And this new study reported in the European Journal of Nutrition that men and women over 70 years of age who strengthened their adherence to a Mediterranean diet during a 3-year period had major improvements in cardiovascular risk factors that were similar to those of a younger group that also improved their adherence. So in effect, you're reversing your aging dynamic here, meaning at 70 and up, if you adhere to a healthy Mediterranean diet, you're going to be at about the same health risks as a younger person who is doing the same thing. So that's good news. Because we hear from a lot of people, I'm too old to change, and you know, what good would it be? You know, I'm 70 years of age. It will do you a lot of good. All right? Also, there's a new study. And I'm going to cut our health and nutrition short because my commentary is going to be a little long. In fact, I'm going to cut it short because I want you to hear all this. First off, you're going to right now watch and hear Professor Luc Montagnier from an interview he did in a really good documentary called House of Numbers. Now, it's a little hard to hear what he's saying, but I'll repeat it. And then I'm going to give you what he said at a speech to the Luxembourg Parliament. and the two will tie together. Now, let's go to the short 3-minute talk where he's being interviewed about HIV and AIDS and how you could destroy it in the body without vaccines and without drugs.
You talked about oxidative stress earlier. Is treating oxidative stress one of the best ways to deal with the African AIDS epidemic?
I think this is one way to approach, to decrease the rate of transmission, because I believe HIV, we can be exposed to HIV many times without being chronically infected. Our immune system could get rid of the virus within a few weeks if you have a good immune system. And this is a problem also of African people. Their nutrition is not very equilibrated. They are in oxidative stress, even they are not infected with HIV. So their immune system doesn't work well already. So it's prone, it can, you know, allow HIV to get in and persist. So there are many ways which are not the vaccine, the magic name, the vaccine. Many ways to decrease the transmission just by simple measures of nutrition, giving antioxidants, proper antioxidants, hygiene measures, you know, fighting the other infections. So they are not spectacular, but they could, you know, decrease very well the epidemic to the level they are in occidental countries,
so
Western countries.
If you have a good immune system, then your body can naturally get rid of HIV.
Yes.
Oh, interesting. Do you think we should have more of a push for antioxidants and things of that nature in Africa than antiretrovirals?
We should push for more, a combination of measures, antioxidant by nutrition, advice and nutrition, fighting other infections, malaria, tuberculosis, parasitosis, most children have worms. education, of course, genital hygiene for women and men also. Very simple measure, which is not very expensive, but which could do a lot. And this is my worry about, the many spectacular action. Of course, there are global funds to buy drugs and so on, Bill Gates and so on, for the vaccine. But, those kind of measures are not very well funded, not funded at all. Or they are, it really depends on the local government to take conscious of this. But local government, they take advice of the scientific advisor from the surgeon institutions, and they don't get this kind of advice very often.
There's no money in nutrition, right? There's no profit.
There's no profit, yes. Water is important. Water is key.
Now, one thing you said, you were talking about the fact that if you have a built immune system, it is possible to get rid of HIV naturally. If you take a poor African who's been infected and you build up their immune system, is it possible for them to also naturally get rid of it?
I would think so.
Okay. That's an important
It's point. Important knowledge which is completely neglected. People always think of drugs and vaccine. So this is a message which may be different from what you heard before, no?
Here's what he said were not able to hear everything clearly. He said instead of putting all the emphasis behind the vaccines, as Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci were wanting us to do, he believed that increasing hygiene, clean water, and antioxidants, and a healthy diet. And he was asked twice, and this was not the only interview in which he made this statement, that yes, you could rid the body of HIV with this kind of high antioxidant activity, and you could reverse the HIV infection with antioxidants. And that's when he was asked, wouldn't it make sense to provide these to the people in Africa, except instead of just antiretrovirals? Yes, he said. Now, none of this material was ever distributed to the larger scientific community, to the AIDS community. But keep in mind, 1,200 individuals with full-blown AIDS, advanced AIDS, near death many times, all of them reversed their AIDS symptoms, all of them. Not a single person died in 15 years under my care at the Tri-State Healing Center with our team of outstanding physicians, Dr. Howard Robbins, Dr. Dr. Steinberg, Dr. Tannenbaum, we had Dr. Almira Gadal. We had a whole team approach. I created the protocols. I was there every day. We spoke with people, didn't use masks, didn't use gloves, because it was not infectious. Yet Anthony Fauci wanted us to believe that even children could become infected, and therefore the isolation. And he was doing this, what he's doing now, he was doing back then with AIDS. And yet 18 individuals, 10 at the Institute of Applied Biology, in a special lab they set up for me, I was asked by the director, if we give you all the protocols you want and a medical team to work with you, will you do what we hear? And two other scientists from the Institute to come over. These were ultra-Orthodox scientists, pro-pharma all the way. They came over to the Tri-State Healing Center, 72nd and Broadway. But thousands upon thousands of people came and reversed or improved their conditions. And he was speaking with some of the people who had full-blown AIDS who were completely normal. And I put them on an advanced protocol. Instead of coming once a week, they were coming 6 days a week for 4 hours. And every single one of those reversed their HIV status, meaning they went from HIV positive to HIV negative and completely healthy and have maintained that. We monitored them for years. In any case, they set up a lab downstairs and they provided me with a physician and a nurse and two drip sharers. And so then I work with them. And of the 10 people I work with, over a 16-month period, all 10 reversed their HIV status. Now, what did they have in common with what Luc Montagnier just said? Massive amounts of antioxidants, more than anyone had ever received in American history. And that, you can go to the medical literature and see, it's absolutely correct. I was using doses no one's ever used, no sickness, no adverse side effects, cured, cured. Now, if I'm saying, as a public figure, as a scientist, as a journalist, as a broadcaster, that I've cured AIDS, challenge me. Say I'm wrong. Because you won't do it. Because if you open that door, and I tried that, I tried to share this with a big press conference. You know, the former governor of New York was there. Scientists were there that had interviewed all the patients with their medical doctors to show that they actually were long-term survivors without HIV, who had HIV and no AIDS symptoms. It was because what Luc Montagnier just said. He said this much later, but he said it, and then he came to believe that. Here's something else Luc Montagnier said, and I'm quoting verbatim. This was a speech he gave, Nobel laureate in medicine for discovering AIDS. Professor Luc Montagnier was invited to Luxembourg Parliament to accompany petitioners speaking out against compulsory vaccines on Wednesday, January the 12th. All right, recent. He spoke on the COVID vaccines and geneticist Alexandria Henrion Claude was also there. Luc Montagnier said in his speech, quote, these vaccines are poisons. They are not real vaccines. The mRNA allows its message to be transcribed throughout the body uncontrollably. No one can say for each of us where these messages will go. This is therefore a terrible unknown. And in fact, we are now learning that this is a work published over a year ago, that these mRNA contain an area that we can call prion, which is an area capable of introducing protein modifications to an unpredictable, in an unpredictable way. As a doctor, I knew 21 people who received two doses of Pfizer vaccine. There is another person who received Moderna. The 21 died of Kruschev-Jacob disease caused by prions. The three vaccines, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and Moderna, contain a sequence identified by information technology as transformation into a prion. There is, therefore, a known risk to human health. All right? That's what he had to say. Therefore, I am dedicating this just finished article, just finished this morning, based upon his death and what he was trying to share with the world. One of the greatest scientists in history. And he won all the honors you could win in France, the highest honors in science, medicine, won the Nobel Prize. And yet the entire medical and scientific community turned its back on him. That's the power of the deep state. That's the power are the wealthiest corporations in the world controlling the vaccines. So if they control the narrative, they control the profit stream. So whether the vaccine profits go to company A, company B, vaccine A, booster B, you know, Remdesivir, they control it. They profit from death. They profit from chronic disease or treating a person as if they're going to be chronically or forever given a medication. They do not profit from health. That seems to bother them. Hence the article, "You are wrong if you believe all vaccines are safe and effective." Richard Gale and myself. This can be downloaded and shared with others off our site. It is fully documented. For the past 2 years, a paradox we have heard repeatedly by the White House and our health agencies are warning and fears about the threats of the SARS-2 contagion framed as a consensual scientific fact that are non-negotiable. Topping the list is the propaganda that the COVID-19 vaccines are safe and effective and inexpensive, repurposed drugs such as hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. No, they're ineffective and dangerous. These givens no longer warrant debate, and it is our duty as responsible citizens to simply accept our government's 24/7 advertisements of its claims throughout the mainstream media. Thousands of physicians and medical experts who disagree with Biden and Fauci and the CDC and Rochelle Walensky are immediately excoriated as anti-vaxxers, perilous distributors of misinformation, and systematically censored from social media. Efforts to bring scientific debate into the halls of Washington by Senator Ron Johnson are denigrated, although Senator Johnson has been at the forefront more than anyone else, bringing people, both the doctors and scientists with impeccable backgrounds, by the way, all pro-vaccine, and most of them have had the current vaccines. So the argument that they are all anti-vax is simply not true, just like the people in the truck convoys. Turns out that about 90%, according to the independent research, is these individuals have been fully vaccinated. Well, how can you say that all the people driving to protest the sanctions are the anti-vaxxers when the majority have been vaxxed and are pro-vaccine? No. What has happened is that the one senator who had the courage to do these forums has been severely ridiculed for hosting only opponents of the official narrative and patients suffering from severe vaccine reactions in his televised hearings. However, what does the media not tell you? What is censored out of this story that changes the context? The media fails to report that Senator Johnson invited over a dozen of the most respected and mainstream mandatory vaccine proponents, including Paul Offit, Peter Hotsit, and high officials from every federal health agency who either declined to participate or ignored the invitations altogether. If you deeply believe you are in the right and you have a dominant position of advantage over your opponents, then what is the incentive to engage in any kind of open, honest, and civil debate where your weaknesses may then be publicly exposed? Questions over vaccine efficacy and safety have been with us for decades. Yet during the past couple of years, we no longer hear any discussion about previous vaccines, as if all vaccines throughout all history have been safe and effective. But in the meantime, the nation's autism rate has increased to 1 in every 40 children. Just 2 years ago, according to the CDC, it was 1 in 59. The autism vaccine controversy has not disappeared, and we need to think very carefully about injecting small children starting at ages 2 with experimental gene therapy drugs, along with all the 16 other multi-dose vaccines administered to children before the age of 6. However, our health officials and the overarching medical establishment today has been mesmerized by a collective groupthink. For decades, this hypnotic trance of scientific denialism has functioned as a vicious feedback loop to perpetually reinforce their biases. Our dozens of investigative reports, over 70 that Richard Gill and I have written and posted, questioning vaccine efficacy and safety and the politics that keep this mythical narrative alive, shows that very legitimate questions remain unanswered for the majority of vaccines currently being administered. Unfortunately, these vaccines' falsehoods have been carried into the political and economic efforts to mandate experimental gene therapy, because that's what it is, never before used in human history. And we are the guinea pigs. We're the control group. And they have not been adequately tested and analyzed. But you wouldn't know that from the New York Times. This is despite the fact that the COVID-19 vaccines have contributed to more serious injuries, permanent disabilities, and deaths than all previous vaccines combined during the past 30 years. Don't take my word for it. Do a quick search on the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, the VAERS. It'll show you that during a 14-month period, the COVID vaccines were 49 times deadlier than the influenza vaccine for the number of doses administered. What are the actual statistics? Between 2008 and 2020, over 1.7 billion flu shots were administered in the United States. That's approximately 140 million per year. This accounts for 137,533 adverse reports and 663 deaths. That's from the flu vaccine. Now, compare that with the nearly 550 million COVID vaccine doses, or one-third of the number of flu shots given in less than a tenth of the time frame, and we find 742,179 adverse events and 10,423 vaccine-induced deaths. If this were any other vaccine or drug, it would be immediately removed from the market. There'd be major congressional investigations. Debate would be unnecessary. And these are just the adverse event figures based upon just the official data found in VAERS, which we will see are grossly underreported. The U.S. federal health agencies and their media advocates are mandatory vaccination consistently repeat a dangerous mantra that has no warranted basis in medical science. This monolithic industry, now a massive network of thousands of private corporations and governmental institutions and scientists, all supported by a compliant media, obedient media, supplicant media, wants us to believe that science has finally settled the debate over COVID-19 vaccine safety and efficacy. All the data's in, we're told. Yes? No, it's not. No further research and discussion is necessary, we are told, because aside from very rare, almost non-existent adverse effects, maybe a little bit of myocarditis, not to worry, vaccines have been officially ruled to pose no worrisome neurological and immunological risk to infants, children, pregnant adults, mothers, and the elderly. But this official storyline is founded upon flawed premises and a naive, if not malignant, understanding about the complexities of the human body and its multifaceted immunological systems. The narrative's fallacy is actually quite simple. Valid science, real science, is never settled. The myth of a settled science, which is especially endemic in the biological and medical sciences that rely upon private financial interest, is sheer propaganda. Valid science, honest science, real science, on the other hand, that you never see reported in the mainstream media, constantly seeks new discoveries, constantly seeks to, in effect, deconstruct its own myths, and therefore acquire further knowledge and greater understanding. The pursuit to fully comprehend the complexities of our biological, immunological, and physiological systems, therefore, is in a perpetual infinite regress. Therefore, it's just the opposite of what we're stating today. Today's justifications for medical intervention, whether by drugs or vaccines, eventually become tomorrow's barbarities as science further penetrates the hidden function and operations of the human organisms. Hence, valid medical research should elicit new questions and not settle upon incomplete facts that are then proselytized as universal truths. However, Gerberman and his pharmaceutical allies want to stamp out both scientific skepticism and public uncertainty once and for all by repeating irrational absolutist claims. As you will see, the grand RNA gene therapy experiment to wage a war against COVID has moved out of the controlled clinical trial setting and into the public domain. This medical experiment has gone globally nuts. It is crazy. It is irresponsible. It is a crime against humanity. It's as bad as a reality game TV show, pitting the righteous and compliant vaccinated population against the unvaccinated, who are to be shamed and blamed for perpetrating the pandemic. It is now over a year since COVID vaccines were launched, and during the months there is growing evidence that these experimental shots have categorically failed to curb the pandemic. Positive caseloads have been worse under Biden than under Trump, despite the over-reliance on faulty PCR testing to monitor accurate infection rates in 2020. Now that the CDC has officially phased out PCR testing with no major public apology, what does that say about the tens of millions of Americans who were told, you're positive, that's a danger, you've got to get going, you know, take the medication. Well, no apologies, and just total confusion, especially for the enormous amount of false positive results. And then we have the idea that that same PCR test, the PCR test failed to distinguish between coronavirus and influenza infections, which may account for the mysterious decline in flu rates and deaths to near zero for the past 2 years. There's no scientific rationale for a natural biological mechanism to account for influenza's decline other than inaccurate testing, institutional neglect to monitor the flu season, or the reclassification of flu and other respiratory illnesses as COVID cases. New variants such as Omicron, which health officials claim will require booster shots as the sole defense, do not have to follow the present course. There was zero sound scientific reason to ignore effective prophylactic and early treatments for SARS infections in order to put the national full attention and resources into experimental vaccines. Consequently, it comes with little surprise that the original vaccines have had minimal effect, if any, to reduce the new variants. Even the most fanatic pro-vaccine media outlets such as CNN, PBS, NPR, and the New York Times have started to call Biden's and our health officials' policies into question, but they do so gently. There are numerous examples from other countries' national policies to dramatically reduce serious progression of SARS-2 infections. If a treatment strategy had been followed at the start of the pandemic, which we advocated, COVID-related deaths would have been effectually reduced and the virus may never have reached pandemic levels. However, U.S. health officials were direly unprepared to confront a pandemic caused by a new viral strain. They were also grossly negligent to follow and act upon the available medical data on inexpensive, FDA-approved repurposed drugs. Rather, their focus was on developing a vaccine, and as a consequence, the U.S., U.K., and Canada became exemplary models of institutional medical ineptitude. Stupidity with a capital S. Their health policies are less than what should never be done to lessen the threats of a pandemic. Evaluating benefit versus risk ratios to determine anti-pandemic measures is a subjective exercise fraught with inherent and confounding biases by those who conduct the analysis. There are no proven objective means to accurately determine whether benefits outweigh risks or vice versa. This is especially true for the novel experimental COVID-19 gene therapies, which have been relabeled as vaccines. Before receiving FDA's green light of emergency authorization use, the trials were cut short. Did you know that? Did you know that the FDA allowed all these trials to be cut short? Yes, Well, what happens when you cut short a trial? How can you then say that we ran the trial for the full 3 years and here's the results? Quite simply this, the trials were cut short by vaccinating the study's control group who had received the placebo. That's unheard of in science. An anomaly during the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines clinical trials in 2020 violates conventional standards. The placebo groups, meaning they just received a saline solution, were not carried out through the full conclusion. Contrary to common sense and clinical protocol, placebo participants were vaccinated long before the trial's completion. In effect, the vaccine companies wiped out, expunged, any potential clinical trace to properly observe and evaluate long-term adverse events from the vaccines. Their trials are now null and void, and no post-trial data will ever be forthcoming about their actual long-term risks because they destroyed the data. Therefore, it is imperative that those who are unvaccinated remain so. It is not incorrect when critics argue that the premature release of these RNA drugs is a global medical experiment. Vaccine trials have moved out of a control clinical setting and have entered real life. What do I mean? To conduct a robust medical trial to determine the safety and efficacy of any drug or vaccine, a control group is essential. Now the unvaccinated are the placebo control group for all future epidemiological studies that will eventually deconstruct the official COVID-19 narrative, which has destroyed the quality of life and livelihoods of tens of millions of Americans and perhaps billions worldwide. As long as there remains a notable percent of unvaccinated persons in a population, this global experiment can continue. Sound evidence is building that the rhetoric behind mandatory mask wearing, social distancing, and vaccination will implode eventually. However, if governments succeed in vaccinating every citizen, the experiment will come to an end and the truth will never be scientifically confirmed. It will be a new normal to build back better, a world overseen by digital technology and surveillance. Since there will be very little chance to bring a halt to these experimental RNA therapies, it is crucial to keep this real-life trial alive by supporting the individual rights of unvaccinated populations and the opponents of vaccine mandates. There are no reliable algorithmic models that government-funded research relies upon to keep the propaganda mills churning in order to accurately evaluate the vaccine's risk versus benefit ratio. Biases are intrinsically built into these methodologies. Results are only as good as the data selected to serve as the base criteria. And give credence, well, if you can find credence, can be given to any report that the benefits of vaccination against outweigh the risks. How do they know when all of the adverse events have not been reported? They haven't. And you'll see that only 1-2%, according to the Harvard study. So if you don't have all of the adverse events and all the deaths and all the permanent injuries, then how can you say with any certainty that these are safe? You can't. Yet they were saying it was safe the first week the vaccines were given. That's how compliant the media has been to this false doctrine. To our knowledge, none of these modeling studies have included the growing number of COVID-19 vaccine injuries and deaths, nor are they able to properly determine vaccine ineffectiveness. For this reason, we now find a wide variety of competing data behind contradictory narratives. Massachusetts and Vermont have the highest vaccination rates by nearly 90% of the population, yet both states are reporting their highest rates of COVID cases. Similarly, professional athletic teams such as the NFL, the NBA, the National Hockey League have near 100% vaccination compliance, yet positive test results are skyrocketing. Throughout the country and the most vaccinated nations such as Israel and the United Kingdom, doctors and health professionals working on the ground consistently report that the majority of symptomatic cases, even hospital and nursing home deaths, are among the fully vaccinated. The CDC acknowledges that the COVID vaccines are contributing to anaphylaxis, thrombosis, thrombocytopenia syndrome, Guillain-Barré syndrome, myocarditis, pericarditis, and death. Yet despite reports from around the nation and overseas, the government continues to make every effort to convince us that these adverse effects are extremely rare. Based upon this false assumption, the CDC has found an excuse to ignore the inclusion of accurate vaccine adverse event data into its benefit risk analysis. A recent review of the various data conducted by Columbia University estimated there are upwards of 187,000, let me repeat that, 187,000 vaccine-related deaths during a seven-month period from February through August 2021. To put that in perspective, that is three times more deaths, 300% more deaths than the entire American casualties in the Vietnam War, or more deaths than American soldiers in the First World War. And yet not a single major article in any of the major media about these underreported or non-reported deaths. This is a 20-fold increase over the CDC's figures. Columbia University researchers expressed their greatest concern about vaccinating children. The report states that the risks of COVID vaccines and boosters outweigh the benefits to children, young adults, and older adults with low occupational risk or previous coronavirus exposure, end quote. They also concluded that the VAERS system is unsuited for estimating life-threatening events or vaccine-induced fatality rates. A separate vaccine adverse event reporting system analysis by Dr. Jessica Rose at the Institute of Pure and Applied Knowledge in Israel estimated that the U.S. actually has a vaccine death rate, death of 140,000 Americans, and vaccine injuries are 41 times higher than those reported by the CDC. That would be well over a million. In addition, there is an enormous backlog of vaccine injuries that have not yet been entered into any database from their original source. So therefore, they're not a part of the official record. Over the years, the CDC's vaccine events reporting system has been criticized as an inaccurate system for evaluating the safety profile for any given vaccine and to monitor actual rates of vaccine-related injuries. The VAERS system is the public's only access to data about vaccine safety and efficacy. On the one hand, the system is a passive system, meaning it's not mandatory. You don't want to report it, you don't report it. And you've already heard from people appearing on this program, medical doctors who are pro-vaccine and nurses pro-vaccine, saying that we didn't report all the vaccine adverse events, or in some cases, we didn't report any. Although healthcare professionals are encouraged to report adverse reactions to VAERS, there is no legal requirement to do so. In fact, many physicians, pediatricians are unaware the database exists. Whether or not reaction is reported is largely left to the professional direction of the attending physician or medical facility staff. If a person with a life-threatening adverse vaccine reaction is seen in an ER, it is nearly impossible for attending healthcare workers to enter the case into the VAERS system unless they administer the vaccine or know the manufacturer's vaccine lot number. Well, that's not going to happen, ever. The entire reporting system is terribly subjective. In addition, the system is not user-friendly. Health professionals who make efforts to enter adverse reactions frequently complain about it being time-consuming and extremely cumbersome. Over a decade ago, the VAERS failure as a reliable vaccine adverse event reporting was reviewed and criticized by Harvard scientists. Their report predicted that only about 1 to 2% of the vaccine-related injuries and deaths are actually reported. Although there has been a weak official effort to require healthcare workers to report adverse reactions into the VAERS system, it has been discouraged by most working in the system, just too time-consuming. It was also discovered that the database grossly underreports actual vaccine injuries. Recently, I reported on this program that Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla backtracked on previous statements to support the company's COVID-19 vaccine efficacy. Speaking at a healthcare conference hosted by J.P. Morgan, Borla admitted that, quote, two doses of the vaccine offers very limited protection, if any. Three doses with a booster offers reasonable protection against hospitalization and deaths, end quote. The comment comes at a time when breakthrough cases among the fully vaccinated have escalated, particularly for the now predominant Omicron variant. In addition, a flurry of studies during the past 6 months indicates that the vaccines do not provide any robust and long-term immunity. Depending upon the individual's health status and the strength and weakness of his or her immune system, vaccine immunity can begin to wane rapidly after 3 months following vaccination. At best, immunity seems to last no longer than 5 to 6 months for the average person. Now that over a year has passed since the COVID-19 vaccines were rolled out, we are discovering that there are further more problems than we were led to believe during the very limited clinical trial period in autumn of 2020. Due to the vaccine's failure to protect recipients, an emphasis is now being placed on booster shots. But nobody in the drug industry and the federal health agencies question at what point will repeated boosters create irreparable damage to the body's immune system. If we anticipate the emergence of new SARS-2 mutation variants in the future, well, when will boosters ever cease? It has been 14 months since Israel launched its vaccination campaign exclusively with Pfizer's RNA drug, and the government now demands Israel receive a fourth shot. Medical experts advising the Israeli Health Ministry raised an alarm. As reported in the New York Times, the scientists noted that too many shots might actually harm the body's ability to fight COVID and might cause a sort of immune system fatigue. Other concerns include following a third shot, immunity wanes more rapidly, and the elderly who received repeated boosters are at high risk of a systemic immune system shutdown. This may be one reason, among others, that the vaccines are being shown to be ineffective against Omicron. According to the Israeli scientist, there is no evidence that more boosters can prevent Omicron infections. In fact, what we are now witnessing with vaccine failures, growing cases of adverse effects in people receiving more than one injection, and the rapid pace of viral mutations giving rise to new variants, was predicted on this program by Dutch vaccinologist Dr. Gerrit van der Bosch back in the summer of 2020. You might remember that the most crucial biomechanisms in our immune system is immunoglobulin M antibodies, or IgM. Those are our memory antibodies. This is our first line of defense against SARS infections, and everyone who has been exposed to any coronavirus variant in his or her lifetime has these neutralizing IgM antibodies. When we contract the virus, the B cells activate the body's memory cells, thereby producing IgM. However, as van der Bosch warned, and what we are now observing to explain vaccines' failure, the RNA vaccines and repetitive shots can overload your neutralizing immunity and override your neutralizing immunity with non-neutralizing spike protein antibodies. We do not wish to undermine SARS-2 risks among immune-compromised and the elderly. The SARS-2 virus spike protein can indeed trigger serious autoimmune reactions, and this has been reported extensively in the scientific literature. However, the RNA gene therapies are perfectly designed whereby we would expect to see similar or identical autoimmune activity giving rise to life-threatening health conditions. Consequently, the rise in vaccine-related autoimmune conditions was very predictable. We predicted it here, and every immunologist is qualified to concur this fact. Following multiple RNA vaccinations, the body's cells express enormous amounts of toxic spike proteins. Your immune system recognizes these proteins as foreign and attacks them, but can also potentially attack the body's own cells expressing the spike protein. This is a basic definition of autoimmune disease. This is the gist of the van der Bosch early on concerns about immune escape. And now this is exactly what he observed as vaccine-related injuries and deaths continue to pile up. In a paper published last May, the authors warned that the Pfizer vaccine's experimental programs, both adaptive and innate immune responses, could be affected. This can result in gradual immune depletion. So not today and not tomorrow, maybe a year or two from now, we're going to see an awful lot of people sick with no way to reverse that sickness. And that could be phenomenally devastating to millions of Americans. But no one's looking at it. No one's anticipating it. Vaccine-induced immunity is waning as clinics and hospitals fill up with the vaccinated patients. On the one hand, they may be temporary, short-term protections against the virus and its variants for high-risk persons. However, overall, the body's immune system is gradually deteriorating after every vaccine. It is a horrible trade-off as vaccinated persons become increasingly susceptible to other viral, bacterial, and fungal infections. Repeated and frequent cytokine stimulation after every shot also increase the prospects of triggering a lifelong systemic autoimmune condition such as cancer, arthritis, and diabetes, multiple sclerosis, etc. We've been reading about these warnings steadily during the past year, but the research is being completely ignored by the media. Last November, a Freedom of Information request was submitted to the CDC to get documented data on persons who never received COVID vaccines and who were once infected, recovered, and were later infected again, and recovered persons who transmitted the virus to another person. To the surprise of the submitters, the CDC responded that the search area of their records failed to reveal any documents pertaining to their request. The CDC's Emergency Operations Center conveyed that this information is not collected. Over 130 published studies have been compiled by Dr. Paul Alexander, a former assistant professor of evidence-based medicine at McMaster University in Ontario, to confirm the advantages of natural COVID virus immunity following infection compared to immunity generated by vaccines. There is more data on the benefits of natural immunity compared to the uncertainty of how long vaccine-induced immunity lasts. A Washington University School of Medicine study indicates that for some individuals, immunity may be lifelong after you've been naturally infected. For children, the news is better. Young infants, according to the University of Bristol, produced an extraordinarily strong immune response against SARS-2 compared to other age groups. The researchers state there is no reliable evidence or argument whatsoever to warrant vaccinating small children. Israel's National News reported natural immunity may be 600% greater than that provided by vaccines, and Bloomberg upgraded this study with another estimated 1,300% greater immunity if you've not been vaccinated and you get sick, and then you get well. There is already strong evidence, such as a UCLA study, that there is little to no difference in SARS infection rates between the fully vaccinated and those with natural immunity following a previous infection. But one of the strongest studies published in Science magazine by Maccabi Health Science Services in Israel, which enrolled 2.5 million Israelis, found that those who once had the SARS infection were much less likely than the vaccinated to get the more dangerous Delta variant, become symptomatic, or be hospitalized. This would explain a novel analysis by epidemiologists at the World Health Organization. The study analyzed records of 160 million people worldwide who had recovered from COVID. Those who have recovered had an astonishingly low frequency of repeat infection and disease or death. This is clearly not the case for the evidence emerging among the vaccinated, whose symptomatic infection rates continue to increase. During the past month, nations, particularly in Europe, are opening up again, dropping lockdowns and vaccine mandates, and allowing their societies to return to a level of normalcy. And finally, amongst a dozen Western countries, they are following the prevailing science about masks, social distancing, schools, and business closures, and the robustness of our natural immunity against SARS. They're opening up. Especially important unvaccinated persons who were previously infected with the virus will be categorized as on par with the vaccinated. Sweden, for example, has announced that the pandemic is essentially over and the virus will no longer be classified as a danger to society. Had the FDA and Anthony Fauci's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease started approving existing clinically positive and inexpensive drugs at the start of the pandemic, many millions of people would have been saved from experiencing serious infections or even dying from the SARS-2 virus rather than waiting for a vaccine that was rushed to market with very minimal regulatory oversight. Why federal health officials never followed this strategy is a question the mainstream media has refused and will never ask, will never investigate. What we do know is that the entire landscape of modern medical science has entered a time warp since the arrival of COVID-19 pandemic. For those of us who have been trying to make sense of the long trial of incomprehensible medical decision-making, contradictions in scientific sleight of hand, media lies, bureaucratic posturing, and censorship of otherwise orthodox physicians and scientists who refuse to adopt the narrative decreed from the high thrones of the CDC, Fauci, the FDA, and the General Surgeon's Office, we feel we have been abducted mentally into this pre-Galilean dark age. Today, our regressive medical regime is populated by a dictatorial clergy dressed in lab coats instead of lurking tonsured priests in scarlet robes. Rather than executioners in black robes, the snitches and accusers are Silicon Valley, the mainstream media executives who censor dissenters and heretics. Metaphorically speaking, there is little difference between the pro-mandate COVID vaccination establishment cult and the Inquisition, except the forms of torture are physically non-existent or not painful versus what the Inquisition put people through. Unless, of course, you're one of the million of COVID gene therapy recipients who have suffered from trusting Anthony Fauci and the Trump-Biden administration's czars of COVID operations, then you have felt physical pain and you have faced or embraced death because of their dictates. I'm Gary Knoll. If you find value in what I've shared with you, pass it forward. Have a nice day.